Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world. Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are. It's a pleasure to be back with you today, and we're going to take on a topic that is a little bit a bit of a change of pace for us, but something I'm really interested in, something we've talked a lot about, that is how do we use work like the controls and the benchmarks and really help people focus in on the risk decisions that they are trying to make. So we're joined by some special friends here today. Phyllis Lee from the Center for Internet Security. Phyllis, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you. I love being here, especially I get to see Tony and our friends, Adam and Sher Devi. So hello.
And our special guest today, from Verimo Analytics, Adam Bobro. Adam, welcome to the show. Could you give the folks a little bit of background, sort of what brought you into this industry? You have a particularly interesting history, as I recall.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be here. I know Sher Devi and I are super excited to dig into this topic and talk about risk in cybersecurity. You know, my background is sort of interesting. I'm the least technical person on this call for sure. I am trained as a lawyer and got into cybersecurity really as a governance question. Working in the Obama administration, dealing with the question of what should the government do about Chinese cyber theft of U.S. innovative capacity, then I tried to go into the private sector and translate that into should individual companies or individual organizations facing that threat, what should they do, and really hit upon a risk-based approach using an actuorial model. And that sort of, Sher Devi joined me about 6 years ago in this journey, and we've been working on that ever since.
Super. Yeah. And we'll explore some of the experience that you have and how that impacts what we do at the Center for Internet Security. And our third guest today, Sher Devi Joshi. Sher Devi, welcome to the show. How about giving the listeners a little bit of insight into your background also?
Thank you, Tony. We are excited to be here. Adam and I are the team from Verimo. We are the whole of Verimo. And I'm an engineer. By training, I've been an engineer for the last 30 years of my life. Started out in the semiconductor industry, working on chip design, high-speed chips, analog circuit design. Moved into building the IT system and building the capabilities of a small business and growing it. And then moved from there, actually got interested into cybersecurity and got my certifications and spent a little time back in school studying up on it, and then joined Adam 6 years ago. And we've been doing, and I think what fascinated me, especially when I was in school, was seeing all the different tools that everybody was building. It was a time when there was a new tool coming out for every imaginable idea and catching the bad guys. And I remember thinking that, oh my God, there's so many tools. How do I know which one I need to use? And it's like so strange. And then I remember meeting Adam and I was like, yes, this is what we need to do. We need to have like a risk assessment, something that ties in and gives me an idea of what kind of a tool I want to use, because otherwise it's like so many things that can be confusing.
That's exactly right, Sher Devi. Yeah, you know, you've heard me riff before on the what I call the fog of Moore, right? Which is our problem today in cybersecurity is not a lack of tools; it's a surplus of them. We're drowning in them, in training and certifications and insight into threats and all that kind of stuff. So this, and again, we'll explore here in this episode. This is about decision making. Not about attackers. It's about making good decisions. So Phyllis, if you could warm us up a little bit and give us some background on the work that you've partnered with Verimo Analytics on, and kind of your thinking about how this complements your work, both as director of the controls and now more broadly with best practices at CIS.
Yeah, sure. So as you know, here at CIS, we have the CIS Critical Security Controls. And for us, one of the things that we really wanted to do was provide prioritization for organizations. I always say, where do I start? How can I measure myself? You know, how well have I implemented controls, so on and so forth. And of course, we have our prioritization around implementation groups 1, 2, and 3. And what we've done with that, we have a community defense model that makes sure that when we make a recommendation or a prioritization of, hey, do these things first, these subset of safeguards across all the controls that comprise implementation group 1, do these first, that we can say, yep, and they're going to defend against the top 5 attacks, right? And so we've done that. And then, of course, we have an assessment tool, CSAT, that says, hey, let's measure how well we've implemented implementation group 1. Right. And so that was great. That was successful. So we have all these adopters using CSAT, our free tool. And at the end of it, we get this feedback and they're like, OK, I just filled out this tool. Now what? What do I fix next? Because we all know no one's getting a 100 after they implement even what we say is essential cyber hygiene or IG1. And then luckily, Tony and then my boss, Kurt, ran into Adam and Shirdevi at a conference and they said, you know what? We've got an idea. There's this company that wants to work with us that's going to do, you know, a risk assessment. And what we can do is we can take the output from an implementation group 1 assessment, input into, you know, a tool that allows an organization to say, this is what I can fix first, you know, based on my assessment and based on the prioritization around how well can I defend against ransomware. And I'll let Adam and Shirdevi go into more the details of their tooling, but it really was a great partnership. And it really came at a great time where we were getting that wide adoption of our assessment tool. And it was like, oh, how do you prioritize next? In, I want to say in an important way, in an automated way that is accessible to organizations that perhaps don't have a consultant that they can look towards to say, how do I do a risk assessment, or don't have expertise in-house to say, how can I do this risk assessment? And so, you know, one of our primary objectives here at CIS, as you well know, Tony, is to help those organizations that don't have that cybersecurity expertise on board.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in my career looking at various threat models, costing models, and so forth, and they all have merit. But they all require an incredible level of both expertise and commitment, right? Amount of work to do. And, you know, it's been a barrier. Then it becomes sort of a niche area as opposed to a mainstream area. But Adam, let's go back to your background in, you know, as a lawyer. Many of my best friends are lawyers, by the way. We need you in this field. So the timing is perfect. But also experience in public policy, right? And so contrast the maturity of cybersecurity relative to other areas of risk like public health or transportation safety. Now, what would you expect to see? What do we see in those areas that we ought to be aiming for here in cybersecurity, but we're still grasping at? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, I think that really does. Well, your reference to transportation safety or security, which I think it's a culture of safety that the transportation folks have really adopted, right? Especially we've seen this in aviation, but across the board, if you look at the National Transportation Safety Board and their approach, there's a willingness to examine what happened in the event of an incident and to figure out what the root causes are and therefore to be able to address them, and to share that information as broadly as possible rather than sort of hide it behind non-disclosure agreements or corporate security walls, corporate privacy walls. I found that very that was a very influential impact on my thinking, especially you know, in light of, and now we're getting a little bit into sort of the away from the risk modeling specifically, but I think one component of risk modeling would be better data on cybersecurity incidents, so we have a better sense of what the impacts look like in the real world. And, you know, at the moment, the impulse is, I think it's shifting, but the impulse has been for companies not to share information about incidents so that they'll have incidents if they have a mandatory reporting requirement. Obviously, all 50 states in the District of Columbia have had now for several years, well, longer in some cases, reporting requirements for data breaches, where you actually lose personally identifiable information of a certain number of people, but not like a mandatory or complete incident reporting system. I think we see the SEC moving in the direction of saying publicly traded companies that they have authority over will have to report incidents and be somewhat complete about that. I personally am enamored of the Solarium Commission's recommendation for the creation of a Bureau of Cyber Statistics, which, you know, I think originated with CIS board member Bobby Steffley. So, you know, she is the one who originally said, hey, we really need this. We really need a unified body of statistics on what's happening in this space. And, you know, clearly, it should, you know, the resulting data sets that come out would be anonymized. Like, you wouldn't be trying to shame people. You would be trying to provide the basis for tools that would allow you to do better decision making. And that I think is the essence of it, right?
And when you look at the difference between sort of transportation accidents and cyber incidents, which are like a minute by minute thing, there's so many, but it's discouraged us from that sort of routine thinking about, you know, what is the trend, right? What is the true root cause? What is the, you know, magnitude? What is the probability? Those kinds of things we've really not addressed very well in the industry. And one of the things I really like about the work that you guys have done is it shifts the focus from sort of bad guys. What are bad guys doing to what should I be doing to manage wisely, right? And there's no perfection here. There's no, you know, as we've talked about before, there's no mathematically verifiable state that we see coming anytime in the near future. This is about making choices and having some rationality behind it, you know, which means some data that says some choices have different implications than others. And, you know, every context is different, but there ought to be sort of a routine thinking about that that's just built into this, right? It's kind of hard to imagine that we could continue on much longer without some structured way as a society to think about this kind of risk. So sure, Devi, let me come back to you. So you come at this as a technologist first, and now you're talking to the lawyer, you're trying to figure out the business issues here. What tell me about your learning process when you came to this, right? Where you come from a world that has measurements, some precision, some workflow and management and algorithms that you can rely upon. And now you're in this kind of fuzzy cyber business. So what was the early discussions with Adam like, and how did you come to some understanding here?
So, yeah, so it was very interesting. As you pointed out, Tony, I did come in with a very deterministic mind frame. I think that's how as engineers, we're like 2 + 2 = 4. There's a very deterministic answer. And, fuzziness and not knowing an answer was not a part of my world. But what was interesting was exactly what I said, that I came into the cybersecurity world thinking there's so much tooling, there's so much information, and so much, it's like a constant bombardment of information about how so much bad stuff is going on. There's hacking, there's ransomware, there's like just so much out there. And I remember thinking that, how do I know how to protect myself? Where do I start? And which tool do I use? As a technologist, especially when I was learning about the tools, I'm like, tool A differs from tool B in not very different ways. Tool A and tool B are very similar. And now there's tool C that is touted to be like the next big, the elixir that'll solve all problems. And I was like, oh my God, I mean, seriously, I'm a technologist and I am supposed to know the answer and I am confused. So when I met Adam, the first time the discussion we had, I remember him going through the whole cybersecurity work that he had done with NIST and in his time at the OSTP. But what really grabbed my attention was he said, we need to figure out a way to prioritize. We need to have like a way that a business or an organization or even an individual, instead of looking at it, and I like to use the analogy of like from the health perspective, you want to look at it holistically. you want to look at it as a complete person. You're not just fixing one arm and one leg of a person, but not caring about the rest of the body. So coming to it from like a risk what Phyllis mentioned that you prioritize, but also more holistically, like what do you actually need and how do you think about what you need for the decision support making? And that was the first time I heard about FAIR and about thinking about the business aspect of it. And it was a lot of learning for me because the commercial aspect was like, as a technologist, you're like, oh, just get that firewall. Who cares how much it costs, right? We want the latest and the greatest. So, yes. And it's so going from there to actually thinking about giving it a very holistic approach from a business perspective, understanding that every business, the business proposition comes first. And also making sure that the tool you're buying actually does the job you want it to at the cost that you want it to do it. And it's not more cost, more expensive than what you're trying to fix.
Yeah, exactly. There's a sort of common sense that's been missing in a lot of that. Yeah, there's a famous old line, and it's a friend of mine that said it, but I'll pick on him anyway. You know, the only secure computer is one where the power's turned off and the cord is unplugged, and fill it with concrete and sink at the bottom of the sea or something like that. You know, and people say that to, I don't know, sound clever or whatever, but you know, well, that might technically be true, but then you don't have a business, right? You're not able to do anything. And that's not the point of computing. The point of computing is to do something. And so inherently there's going to be risks there. But one point you made is a really important one is this holistic and system view of it. At the end of the day, right, we could build, in fact, history tells us, we could build mathematically verifiable operating systems, for example. But that's one piece of a system. You know, the applications, the user, the connectivity to others. So at the end of the day, security and insecurity are system effects. Right. You can't understand them until you put all these things together and a number of these pieces you don't control. So you're going to make a risk decision about just a large number of variables, some of which you could do something about, some of which you have to kind of accept as they're just part of the landscape or the context of the decision. So yeah, I can imagine those early conversations. Because once I met my first lawyers, by the way, and I had the same thing. I would share, Adam, don't laugh at me. Being naive about legal things, I said, I just sort of naively thought, well, the law is digital, right? It's digital. It's binary. You follow the law or you don't. Oh, how naive I was. No, it's messy and analog. It's full of like weird conditions that have to get worked out over time. And the reasonable thing that, you know, that we all have a touch to is it's like, how can you use reasonable in all this legislation and regulation and not actually define the term? Oh my gosh, that doesn't make any sense to me. But here we are. So we've been grappling with this problem then of, you know, moving from we publish a great list of recommendations that Phyllis talked about and some tools to help you implement it to shifting to how can we help people prioritize, right? At the end of the day, defense is always a priority game. I've never met anyone who has all the resources that they wish that they had. So there's always prioritization. So Phyllis, as we talked about the task for these folks here and the kind of ideas that we're exploring, what was the starting point? What was the ground rules or the guardrails or the conditions that we talked about with the team?
Yeah, sure. Number one is we really wanted to make it so that any organization, regardless of size, could use the tooling, right? You know, that was number one. We wanted it to be something that you didn't have to have a lot of expertise to use. And what I really liked when we worked with the team, they were like, we can do that. And, you know, one of the things that someone said on the team said, you know, business owners and business leaders know how to make these decisions. So let's not underestimate, you know, what they can answer and not answer. Because when we're going through the questions, I was concerned. And they said, you know, it's okay. They're going to know what's the cost of this, what's the cost of that. And so, you know, what I liked about the tooling as well was, it was based on data. We wanted it to be based on data. We wanted it to, you know, give out the prioritization. We wanted it to be accessible to those small, medium enterprises. And at the end of the day, we wanted a prioritization to come out, most importantly. What we didn't want was organizations, once again, to have to prioritize on their own, because that's not what they wanted. They wanted to know how, this is how well I implemented these safeguards. This is the business, the parts of my business that are important to me. Here are some costs. And at the end, I want to know, what do I need to fix first? And we gave the team, you know, those kinds of bounds, and we wanted to say, and we, you know, kind of, we had some back and forth. No, we wanted it simpler. We wanted it easier to read and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I think the team did a great job with our feedback. And, you know, that tool has been very popular.
And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break.
Most organizations want to streamline their cybersecurity and compliance efforts.
It's just not always easy to do so on your own.
That's where a CIS Secure Suite membership can help.
It provides benefits, tools, and resources designed to help you implement the CIS critical security controls and CIS benchmarks.
Secure Suite can help you strengthen your cyber defenses, comply with common standards, and cybersecurity frameworks, all while saving you time, money, and effort.
Apply for membership today by visiting cisecurity.org.
Start secure and stay secure with CIS Secure Suite.
Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode.
So, Adam, so starting from that sort of setup from Phyllis, how did you translate that into tooling, right? You know, the goal here is to help people forecast a business impact, look at things like likelihood of a loss type event. But so how does that come together? Is there sort of a model underneath, or how did you, you know, turn to your technologist to say, let's make this happen? What's the kind of structure at the top level in terms of the requirements for what you're trying to accomplish?
I think, Tony, for one thing, we wanted to avoid reinventing the wheel, right? We wanted to recognize that there are a lot of risk models out there for doing enterprise risk management, for measuring risk in other domains. And in fact, there's even, you know, some good work that had been done in the lead up to our meeting each other and starting to work with CIS, specifically like Jack Jones and his work with the Factor Analysis of Information Risk, or FAIR, and Doug Hubbard and his sort of series of books on measuring anything in business, including a book called, you know, Measuring How to Measure Cybersecurity Risk. No, I have the title wrong, but we'll figure that out. But either way, they sort of express the fact that in cybersecurity, we should take an actuarial model similar to what's existing in other risk-based approaches. And that means assessing the impact. And, you know, we really leaned on those ideas on the impact side of our model, asking experts within the organization to quantify how much would a cybersecurity incident cost in terms of productivity or your primary business impact, response costs, replacement costs, and then looking through kind of the functions within the cybersecurity framework, recovery and reputational damage, legal costs, things like that. So in doing all of that, we followed, I think, a script that was available to us. But what was really remarkable about becoming engaged with the CIS ecosystem was the thoughtfulness with the way the tools that you had already developed at CIS fit together a little bit like puzzle pieces. And I think Phyllis sort of gave us that in a narrative in her previous answer, right? That the CDM, just to jump to the last stage in that, right? The CDM and the CSAT were talking about how do you associate control implementation with these five most prevalent and most concerning attack patterns that we're seeing, or attack scenarios that we're seeing in the wild. And in that situation, how do you use those, that association between the controls and the tactics and techniques expressed in the MITRE attack framework, which I think we should get into and talk a little bit about because it's such a useful tool in this space. But how do we identify the tactics and techniques that a ransomware attack, for example, uses? And how do the controls actually constrain the ability of an attacker to use those techniques effectively to reach their goal, right? Which is obviously the opposite of our goal, which is to stop them from doing that. And using the CDM and its mapping between the controls and the tactics and techniques really enabled us to build a likelihood model that's tied to that control implementation.
And then that's the last piece. That's the piece that allows us to give the output to the user that says, okay, so if you implement these specific controls, which we see through the CDM and the MITRE ATT&CK framework are specifically associated with the tactics and techniques that a ransomware attacker is using to get into and then impact your system, then you can increase the implementation of these controls. You can put more effort and time and resources into these controls, and you will reduce the likelihood, reduce the impact of the ransomware attack. And that is exactly where we wanted to be. So that was what we were able to do with BIA, is come up with these final reports that give people those guidelines on how to move forward and how to prioritize their next decision, their next cybersecurity spend that they're going to make.
Yeah, that's a great description of the data gathering, and then the, I'll call it the scenarios, right? The intuitive questions that are in plain English that we were trying to help answer. And I think Phyllis would confess also that, you know, and thanks for the nod to the different parts of the CIS ecosystem. We built those pieces not with one grand plan in mind, but knowing that if we were ever going to be able to quantify, for example, we needed to be able to establish the value of individual safeguards, you know, recommendations at a level. And then once you have that, you can do a lot more analysis and build upon that as a foundation. So I think you really, really captured that well. So sure, Debbie, so that's the story, right? But you had to actually make it work. So give us a little look at under the hood of the technical challenges and how you put this together in, you know, from the data end to the reporting end.
Right. So when we started looking at like the modeling from FAIR, we started looking at FAIR and using that as a starting point. I remember that we initially looked at the statistical modeling because a lot of the models that use FAIR to calculate the frequency, that is likelihood of the part of the equation, they were looking at the statistics of what is out there in the wild. So, and I remember looking at that and thinking the number was so low and there was nothing to tie it back to the controls. And that was a big piece of where we went looking, and we were like, you know, using the CDM, using the MITRE ATT&CK model, we can directly tie the controls to the likelihood and give a direct path for users and subscribers to know that, you know, if you change this control, you will see an effect on your impact or the risk part of it. So now we started from there, and then it was interesting because I coded everything in Python, and I'm an engineer and I've done technology, but I have never actually built an app like from scratch. So I went back and I was like, started doing the research on how do I build this and what is the best application and the best way that I can do it, because this was an MVP. So I didn't really need to be super flexible, like think of all the amazing things that people do, which is like to grow it and build it. It was more like, we need something that we can get to demonstrate that this concept and this idea works and that this is a good place to start. So I have to say it, I'm going to say it out loud. I literally learned on the job.
That's okay. So, confession is good for the soul.
We'll find out. But I did the research. And also the other thing that was in the back of my mind while doing this was, you know, we are making a security product. So I do need to think about the security aspects of what we are building. So that was an interesting journey, thinking about secure design. I've coded a lot in my life. I've done a lot of programming for different parts of my jobs for different reasons. But I never actually thought about security as a part of it. And coming into that as somebody who's building a product that is for the security purpose, it actually changed the way I look. And I have to say, you have to think about it differently. You have to approach the problem a little differently. Everybody talks about shifting left. And I think I shifted left for the first time there. And I can see how you spend a lot more time up front. So there's more time investment coming, starting the process. And then it starts to, you bake it into your thinking a little bit as you go along and it gets easier. But I did spend some time figuring out which would be the best application that I should choose. So we went to Django, and then we built from there. So it was a parallel process, building the application as the same time writing the algorithm for it to actually do the calculations for the likelihood, writing the Monte Carlo simulation for it that we run with the impact side of the model, which is a statistical distribution. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a fascinating problem, you know, to bring together the sort of security view technology, the decision making part of it, right? And how do you put yourself sort of in each of those domains and bring that together into one view that allows people to make a rational choice, right? Not a perfect choice. That's not the goal here, and to take advantage of the things that we've already created at CIS, it gives you the, I think, substructure to pull that together. And again, you've helped us and conceptualize how all this will work together. So Phyllis, this was, I think, used the term MVP, minimum viable product. And it's a bit of an experiment here, right? We were trying something. We picked a meaningful set, in a real life kind of way. But so where are we now? Is the experiment a success? And if so, what's next?
I would say yes, the experiment is a success. It's part of our free tooling. You actually have to physically export results and import them into the tool. And what we have found is many, many organizations, hundreds and hundreds, over 1,000 organizations have decided, yeah, it's worth it. I'm going to take that extra step, right? Which is huge, right? Because, it does take additional time. So, yeah, we view it as a success. Now, for those of you who don't know, FAIR is scenario based, right? And so the first scenario that we chose was ransomware because of its prevalence and the impact. And so I think, what's next is probably integrating it within the tooling, hopefully, so that you don't have to export and import. And then, expand upon the scenarios, right? Organizations are interested in other attack types or other scenarios. And I think that's something that we need to do discovery on, maybe to prioritize that if we need to. But I think for sure, this tool has been successful. Organizations love it. And they're like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, ransomware. I mean, how old is this? How many years has it been? Like 3 years?
Two and a half.
Guess what? People still care about ransomware. So it's not true, just yeah. We talk about the evolving threat landscape every other, month. Guess what?
Yeah, ransomware still pops right up to the top.
It doesn't change as much as we think.
Yeah. So in terms of, again, focused on a real life problem with the modeling that we have done, for the community defense model, to tie safeguards to it, atomic elements, I'll call them, of attack and so forth. It's a really powerful idea. And I think, there's plenty to grow from it. So we definitely see another step or two or three. But it's also consistent with the shift at CIS, right? This is not about, beyond advice giving. We're here to help people achieve, which means meet them with the problems that they are trying to solve, in particular, risk decision making. Another aspect, actually, Phyllis, if you could talk to it here, is we're very conscious of this. It's not enough to, in today's environment, right? Regulatory pressures, oversight, the European issues, all that. It's not good enough to manage security. You have to explain it to lots of other people, right? You have to be transparent. You have to say, not only that I do right, but let me explain to you in an open way how we did that. And that's part of our plans too, right? Phyllis, anything for the listeners on that?
Yeah, exactly. I think, for us, when we talk about, like you said, being transparent, explaining what you did, when you did it, you talked in the beginning about reasonable and reasonableness. Part of it also is documenting and showing this is the decision I made at this time and why, and what it means to actually reasonably implement a cybersecurity program. And doing a risk analysis is definitely a part of that. You know, we know that all organizations, regardless of size, cannot implement every single cybersecurity control and supporting safeguard in total for a variety of reasons, right? Either it's too costly, perhaps it doesn't apply to them, perhaps there's a compensating control, so on and so forth. There are many other risk factors that organizations need to take into consideration. So we believe strongly that doing that risk assessment, providing that evidence, showing what choices you made at that time will go a long way in helping organizations show or prove that they have reasonably implemented a cybersecurity program.
Yep. Great theme. And again, something that's really been central to our last year or so here at CIS. So, Shridevi, from your point of view, what do you want to see next in all this?
I think next, what I would like to see is a more full tool that has a lot more capabilities, a more flexible tool that can adapt quickly to users' needs. We would like to see some sort of like ability to ingest automatically from the CSAT output, integrate really well into the environment for CIS. And also moving forward, I think something that we have heard a lot from users is control effectiveness. How do you know how effective a control is? It's a little bit of the problem of when you take really good care of your health, you never fall sick. So you never know that how do you actually go back and say that, you know, I'm doing such a great job with my health because I'm doing a great job. But the negative answer is not sufficient, if you know what I mean. So having a way to actually build a model or like a simulation setup that quantifiably gives you an answer of how effective a control is implementing it. So maybe this is more like of a research problem, but I think this is much more, if something like this can be done, is a very tangible benefit to users. So this is way out in the future. That I'm thinking, but also like as an evolution of what we've done so far, which is prioritization, looking at a big picture, holistic viewpoint for an organization, and then moving along and giving some sort of like a control effectiveness number.
Yeah, and it just feels like, because there's a lot of discussion in the industry recently about resilience, and that feels like an essential step to resilience, right? To be able to gauge effectiveness, because then it becomes less about, you know, it's there or it's not, right? The control is there or not, but sort of how does it contribute to a system operating under distress, right? When there's a lot going on there. Okay, so Shridevi, any other last thought you'd care to leave with the audience here? We really enjoyed the chance to dig in under the hood of the business impact analysis tool.
First of all, I want to say it's been a great honor to work with CIS. We, Adam and I, strongly believe that the CIS controls are a very integral part of cybersecurity. We strongly encourage everybody we meet to adopt them, adopt the framework, understand them. We also think that the risk, cyber risk quantification is sort of like the central piece that ties everything together and makes a very holistic look. And we hope to work and continue this journey and grow the ecosystem. And we look forward to many years of working with CIS.
Wonderful. Thank you, Shridevi. Phyllis, your last word for the audience today?
So I will say many organizations approach us and ask us, hey, how can I get funding for cyber? I don't have money for this or money for that. And you know, we always say, well, you have to describe cyber risk to the business, right? And you don't need a risk management office per se to do that, or a cyber risk officer or whatever. And so, you know, what we're really trying to do here is to break down that problem and to make it accessible to everybody. And so this tool, Business Impact Analysis Tool, is a step in that direction. It is a way to say, okay, what is What is the risk to your business? How much do you think it's going to cost if you have a breach? And all those sorts of things, which are asked in the tooling. And so it prompts you, hey, if you don't know what questions to ask, here are some questions you should be asking yourself to understand what is the risk to your business if you get hit with a ransomware attack. And here are the steps you need to take to improve so that you can defend yourself in case something like that happens. And so, I encourage everyone to try out the tool if you haven't. It's not that difficult to use, and hopefully organizations will find it useful.
Yeah, very encouraging so far, Phyllis, and great work by you and the team and our friends here at Verbo Analytics. So looking forward to where this evolves over the next year or so. So to the audience, thank you again for your time and attention. We talked today about some of the work that's happening at the Center for Internet Security around risk quantification, risk decision support, and so forth. And again, I think this is going to be one of our big themes here for the future. So we appreciate your time and attention today. As always, subscribe to us in the usual ways. We publish again a new episode every Wednesday. We look forward to you joining us for the next time. So on behalf of the Center for Internet Security, thank you all very much.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.